quite a long passage of scripture, beautiful story, but a very relevant one for us, if I have to be honest. One of the most amazing things for me about us being human is that God gives us free will. And because He gives us free will, we can assign value to stuff. So, for instance, I'll give you an example. My guitar. I love this guitar. But this guitar is part of a story. And it starts all the way in Mozambique. So I got saved in my first year at varsity. And the next year I went on an outreach to Mozambique. And we went to a city called Luya. And there was this massive bridge that was totally blown to pieces because of the war, the civil war. But the one morning, I was on my way to go and do evangelism. And basically, men are handing those little tracts that Campus Crusade hands out. So, you know, that's what I was going to do. And I went there, and on the bridge, I was just overcome with thankfulness. Just like, wow, Lord, I just want to thank you for everything you've done in my life. Blessed me so much. And that evening at the camp, we had a little girl. I mean to say, if she stands up straight, she's still shorter than me. We called her Krummel, because she was just like a crumb. And Krummel she played a song that night, and the chorus of that song was very close to the words that I prayed that morning on the bridge. And in that moment, I decided, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to learn how to play that song. And I'm going to learn how to play guitar so that I can play that song and sing it to God just to let Him know how grateful I am for Him saving me. I was blown away. So I got back to Stellenbosch, had a couple of problems. First one is I didn't have a guitar. So I borrowed a buddy's guitar. And I learned that song and a couple of Creedence Clearwater Revival songs, because you have to be balanced in life. But I fell in love. I really fell in love with playing guitar, but playing guitar had always been my thing. It's between me and God, nobody else. It's the place where I lose myself in terms of I don't care what anybody thinks, and this is just between me and God. So I've always been very private about it. Even when I'm at home, I will go somewhere where there's nobody else. Just to worship, because this is between me and God. This is me offering my heart to Him. But Marianne and I got married, and we became cell leaders. And if you've ever been in a cell group where you intended to have some singing, and there's no instrument, let's just say it's a dire affair, you know. So Marianne, after many months, convinced me to take a guitar that somebody's given me, an old nylon string guitar, and begin to just lead the singing in the cell group. And it was, I have to admit, it was much better. She was wise in that sense. Yeah. So we would sing, but still, my worship remained between me and God. And eventually, we had enough money so that I could buy a steel string, an acoustic guitar. So I bought myself an acoustic guitar. It was a Stag. You know, it's sort of like just made you want to be a rocker. Mommy bought me the guitar. Yes, my wife bought the guitar. I just see I thought we were one. Okay, but so we bought the guitar, but it was actually my wife. So she bought me the guitar. And I used to lead worship in the cell group, or lead the singing in the cell group, and then it's my quiet time, the worship. So jump all the way forward to Queenstown. So we get to Queenstown, and there I don't have to do anything because we've got an organist. Now, Queenstown, I don't even know the size of the town. Not very big, but there were four organists, and St. Columbus had one of the organists. So at the end of our first year there, the organist comes to me and says to me, well, I'm going on my December holiday. I'm not going to see you for 4 weeks. And I'm like, okay. So I go back to the elders and I said to them, so how do you normally do this when the organist is not here? And they said, no, well, we just, you know, sing a cappella. And I went like, hell no, that's not going to happen. So I take my guitar that my wife bought me, which had a pickup, and I plugged it into the sound system. And for 4 weeks, I led the singing in church. It was like COVID took place then and there as well, because there weren't many people in church. It was over December holiday. So it was a safe space, you know, and I could do that. But after the organist came back, the weirdest thing happened. Both the session, the elders, and the church came to me and said to me, yo, that was so amazing that we missed the guitar just after 4 weeks. Can't we alternate the organ and the guitar? So I spoke to the elders, I spoke to the organist, and she said, I didn't want to admit this to you, but this would actually be really nice, because it's really taxing playing every single Sunday. You know, those who lead worship, they will know what I'm talking about. And so we started alternating. And it went so well that the organist actually came to me with his suggestion, we should actually collaborate, you know. So at one stage she would play one song on the organ and I would do one on the guitar. And that's how we did a worship. It was a weird set, you know, because how do you transition from an organ to a guitar? But anyway, and then she said to me the one day, we started talking, and we started saying, you know what, maybe she should try the piano. And then we make like our own little band, you know. And that was the conversation we had that week. So I get the Sunday to church, and guess what happens? She hands me a letter of resignation. She says, no, she's noticed that in the letter, she says, she sees that she's no longer needed in the church, so she resigns with immediate effect. And I'm male. So I thought to myself, okay, now I've messed up. I probably did said something I shouldn't have. I tried to phone and try to go and see her. I eventually got a hold of her, but she just like, no, this is a done deal. I'm not going to do this. I'm not playing for you anymore. So then I went from having to play or worship on my own and having to lead singing in the cell group to leading worship in church with Marianne helping me. It was a joyful noise. But the whole time I'm praying, I said, Lord, please, 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 Jesus, please send me a worship leader. I need somebody, because I don't know if you've ever done something like this, but it is quite taxing to preach and to lead the worship. It's a really tiring experience, and you have to be switched on the whole time. And so we tried a couple of things, a couple of people, nothing worked. So eventually I realized, okay, I'm in this for the longer run. But I was still praying and asking God, Lord, please send me somebody. And we had this young couple in the cell group. Now, here I'm a bit fuzzy about the details. Marianne will correct me afterwards. But basically, I remember I started praying and started asking God, Lord, I would be willing to give everything. I will even give my guitar if you'll just send me a worship leader. And we were sitting one night in the cell group, and this guy stands up and he says, he just says, you know, I can play a little bit of guitar, but I so want to lead worship. And I go, ka-ching, the God Most High has heard my prayer. Papi, here we go. This is amazing. And so, I can't remember how long it was, but I took my guitar with the traveling case and I gave it to him. Because I just wanted, you know, here we've got somebody with the heart to lead this. Now, the thing about it is I'm functional and I'm not, please hear me, I'm not fishing for compliments. I'll do it much less subtly if I want compliments. But I'm not a worship leader. It's not my thing. I'm a worshiper, but then on my own. And so I do this, but it's a lot more mechanical. And it's not my place. So I thought, yeah, God has answered my prayer. This is the thing. God is going to do this. This is going to be amazing. Truth Bob, 2 weeks later, they sit in the cell group and they tell us they've been given both of them were teachers, and they received an offer from another school in another city, offer too good to refuse, and they leave with my guitar, with everything. So there I sit. So now I'm stuck leading worship, and I have to borrow another buddy's guitar just to lead worship on Sundays. And so eventually it dawned on my lightning quick mind that I'm not going to get out of this one. This is where I'm going to have to be. So I started praying, and I started saying, Lord, please, can I just, if I'm going to have to lead worship, can I have my own guitar there? And we had one music shop in Queenstown, and I went and I looked at the prices, and they were ridiculous, way outside our price range. And I said, Marianne and I spoke about it. I said to her, I would love to have a guitar. I even went down to East London, but just couldn't afford one. And then what happened was this. I left it. And a couple of weeks later, we had a little green Corsa bucky. Marianne phones me. Oh, she comes home and she says to me, listen, you washed the bucky yesterday, but you did a horrible job. The back of the bucket is, it's dirty. How could you miss it? Now, I didn't deal with it in a very Christ-like manner. I stripped my dungas just there. And I'm like, what the hell do you mean I did a half-assed job? And I'm storming out to go and look at the bucket. And in the back of the bucket lies this guitar with a price tag on it. So it turns out the music shop was closed down. And they were selling stock at reduced prices. And the price of this guitar is still on you, because we got this guitar at a third of the price. So every time that I see this guitar, I get to assign importance to it. Because it speaks to me, every time I see it, it speaks to me about God's provision. It's my opportunity to go into my quiet place and worship God as falsely as humanly possible sometimes. But it also reminds me that I have the opportunity to bring him an offering every single Sunday, where I'm not as good as I could be, but it's an offering to him. So the reason why I tell you this very short story is because you might not even have a guitar. You might not even like guitars. But this guitar is important to me. I've assigned value to it. Now, you might have something else that you've assigned value to. It might be your drums, or your wife, hopefully, or a Bible, or a painting, or an action, or something. But as a human being, you've got the right and the ability to assign importance. And you're the only one who can make that choice. Nobody else can make the choice for you. What do you value as important? And this is what happened with Nehemiah. So we read the story of Nehemiah, how he assigned importance to an event. His boot went to Jerusalem. It's about from where they stayed. It's about a four-month journey. So he went there. They suspect that he acted as a prophet in Jerusalem. And then once he did his thing there, he came back, and the two brothers met up, and they started chatting. And Hananiah tells Nehemiah how bad things are in Jerusalem. And it breaks his heart. Absolutely, just breaks his heart. And he starts crying and weeping, but also praying. And I love the prayer. If you read that prayer, what made that prayer so profound was it's not a us and them prayer. It was just an us. He said, Lord, we sinned against you. My father's house, I have sinned against you. And I know what the consequences were. But I also know that you say that if we come back to you, you'll restore us. Look at us. We're coming back to you. So please restore us. Beautiful, beautiful prayer. But it was also a prayer for favor, because he was the king's cupbearer, which was quite a cushy job, but in reality, every day could be your last day. Because if the wife gets angry at the husband, she poisons him. And guess who has to taste the poison first? The cupbearer. So he's the one who needs to taste and drink and everything. So every day could be your last, but The other thing was, is you were not allowed to be sad in the presence of the king. So for 4 months, Nehemiah actually mourns for Jerusalem, and he weeps for Jerusalem. But the king doesn't notice it. And then one day, it's like husbands who wake up to what their wives have been doing all the time. And they go like, "Huh, why are you sad, Nehemiah?" And Nehemiah actually begins to tell him, and the miracle happens where God actually says to him, the king actually says to him, off you go, and here's a couple of letters for you. And he gives him everything that he needs to do in 52 days what the nation couldn't do in 70 years. Amazing story. And there's so much to learn from it. For the first thing is Nehemiah's heart was touched. Obviously, he mourned and he wept. Something grabbed his heart that drove him immediately into prayer. But the second thing was he had a plan. So he formulated a plan. When the king came to him and he said, "Okay, so what do you want?" He could give the king a timeline and a shopping list. But not only did he have a plan, he also owned the problem. He said, "This is not the people who live in Jerusalem's problem. This is my problem. For some reason, I need to do something about this. This is us." But here's the thing. Just like with my guitar, what Nehemiah did was he ascribed or assigned importance to what he was busy doing. When he spoke to the king, he says to the king, "I need to rebuild the city of my fathers." He made it important. And yes, God answered the prayer and he gave him the favor. And he protected him for those 4 months. I want to say to you, I want to suggest to you that the secret source of what Nehemiah did was the ascribing of importance, the facility, the ability that you and I, all of us have got here. We can assign importance to something. You see, let's be honest. All of our hearts have been touched at some stage. Something where God grabs you. Problem that we have is most of us clutch out when that happens, and with reason, because as amazing as you are, as capable as you are, you don't have enough bandwidth to care about everything that everybody tells you to care about. I don't know, do you know about the ship in Port Elizabeth with the sheep that are supposed to have been in the United Emirates 3 weeks ago, that's got the court order against it? The Burki knows. Yeah, the rest of you go like, "What the hell?" Well, I listened to an interview where the people of the SPCA says, "But listen, you're supposed to care about these sheep because they are being transported in inhumane circumstances." You know? Or people saying to you, "Well, you should care about whether 5G is going to fry your brains, or the situation in the schools, and you should care about and. And we just don't have the capacity. So what do? Take a step back. We clutch out. We say, whoa. I'm not going to allow all of this to touch my heart. And we harden our hearts just a little bit, just for survival's sake, because we just don't have the bandwidth. We don't have the scope to care for everyone or anything. I counted the other day 4 robots in Parford View, 18 beggars. 4 robots, 18 beggars. You know, and the guys come and they get quite nasty with you if you don't give them something. You can't care for everybody and everything. But what happens with us, and this is where I want to start challenging or inviting you into a new way of thinking, is what happens with us is when God comes and he touches our hearts and he grabs us, you know that moment where you go like, "Lord, oh, Lord, isn't there something that we can do about it?" Now, it might be with its schnauzers. Is that how you pronounce your dog's names? Yes, it might be schnauzers, it might be orphans, it might be saints, it might be Prepner, it might be 3D printing for all that I know. But it might be something that's unique to you. But when it grabs your heart, when it grabs your heart, then find importance to it. To say, this is important to me. See, because there's the story. You remember the story that was told of the traveler who traveled on his way to Rome, came to the three masons. First one, he said, stop, and he asked him, what are you doing? And he says, well, can't you see? I'm cutting rock here. Stopped at the second one, and the second one said, well, I'm providing for my family. And the third one, when he stopped and he spoke to him, said, so what are you busy doing? And the guy said to him, no, I'm building a cathedral for the glory of God. Three guys doing exactly the same thing, but they assign different importance to exactly the same activity. And because they assign different importance, different levels of importance to the same activities, who would want to bet that the quality of the work and the impact that they have would be different for all three? That's why I have to ask you, in terms of what you're busy doing, are you just a teacher, just a lawyer, just a music producer, just a financial consultant, just a diet, just a lab, working in the lab, is it just that, or are you raising up the next generation of leaders? Are you bringing justice to our society? Are you just going to school, or are you preparing for your future? Are you keeping Bloemfontein healthy and safe? The question, because we do a lot of stuff, but if we get to choose what importance we assign to what we do, nobody can do that for you but you. And if you and I take a step back, just like what Nehemiah did, and we connect what we are busy doing with God's bigger picture, it softens our hearts and it brings us into the place where we can begin to be part of His tapestry, where God can use the thing that He lays on your heart and on your heart, He combines them and He makes this amazing picture. Let me tell you why this is important. Because as the church, capital letter C, Church of South Africa, I believe we've been disobedient. Jesus gave us a command. He said, go make disciples, which we haven't done. We just haven't. And if we don't disciple our city or the nation, somebody else does. And we're currently in a place, in a time, where we're reaping the fruit of us not discipling our city or our nation. Now, when I say discipleship, I don't mean some kind of program. When I was still studying, I went into the theological library because I wanted to find out about discipleship. There was one book in the whole library about discipleship. This thick, written by Winky Pratney. And Winky was actually a guy. Can you believe that? I actually thought to myself when I took out his book, this thick, and I read the whole thing. Yeah, because I wanted to understand what is discipleship about. But when I looked at his name and I saw his photo as a New Zealander, when I looked at it, I thought, dude, you can be so glad you didn't grow up in South Africa. You would have been bullied and made so much fun of at school. You would have had issues. Your issues would have had issues. Imagine your name was Winky. I could see Herman's face, all the jokes that just starts coming up. So don't go there. But the thing about it was this formalized procedure of discipleship. And you look at it and you realize that it's all useless, because all that discipleship actually means is care and being available. When you disciple someone, you're just available to them. They're part of your life. You invite them in. You love them. You care for them. If they need advice, you speak to them. If they need encouragement, you give it to them. That's what discipleship is. It's not this formalized, okay, well, we're going to step 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's none of that. And as the church in South Africa, we've stopped loving our nation We stop loving our city. We stop caring for our city. We stop caring for our nation. And as a result, we didn't disciple. And the city and the nation has been discipled by someone else. And this is why it's important. Because I'm not asking you today to do anything except to consider one possibility. Just to consider one thing. You are in a unique circumstance. You've got gifts, talents, resources, sphere of influence that none of the people around you have got. You contact people. You have contact with people I will never even. That is just, you're uniquely positioned. And over and above that, what breaks your heart is very different to what breaks my heart. But what I'm asking you to consider is whether you would assign importance to what you're doing. Would you consider assigning importance to what you're doing? Because all the mothers here will go like, well, I'm just a mother. No. If you link it to God's kingdom, then you become a world change raiser, whatever, if there's a word like that. Teaching. I always pick on teachers because I think it's the most noble profession. But raising the next generation of leaders, bringing beauty into the world through music, you know, preparing for futures, creating wealth, you know, keeping us safe, you know, bringing justice. Would you consider taking what you do and put it in the bigger picture of what God is busy doing? Now, I'm not saying to you, figure it out. Walk out of here and say, well, I'm going to be the one who brings justice to our city because you're a lawyer. That's not what I'm saying. I'm asking you, would you consider assigning importance to what you do every single day of your life? Every single week I play guitar. I'm not particularly good at it. I don't sing that nice, but and I've got photographic and video evidence to prove back it up. But here's the thing. Every Sunday that I stand there, it's my sacrifice, my offering to the God who has been so good to me, who's given me so much more than I could ever think or imagine. I've connected it to his picture. That creates that connection, that assigning of importance to it, creates the possibility that when your heart breaks for the kiddies, or you are busy creating wealth, or you are busy making something beautiful, but you don't. It creates the possibility of us being part of his tapestry. And because we offer it to him, because we seek his kingdom first, because we assign importance to the things that touches our hearts and where we find ourselves, we become part of the process of discipling our city and our nation. So I don't need you to run out of here and do something weird. Okay? Those of you going to cliques, just no, don't preach at anybody. Okay? Don't. Okay? All I'm asking is, whether you're at a builder's, whether you're cooking the books, whether you're in the lab, whether you're at the office, whether you're at school, just assign importance to it. Make it important. Because in that process, if you say, Lord, this is important before you, we begin to disciple, we can begin to disciple our city. Does that make sense?